Hey, Dee.
Hey, Adam.
What do you think are the unspoken rules of career progression, and how should we navigate them?
What an amazing question. Let's get into it.
Okay, well, a good thing that this is CX Etera, where we
talk about the future of CX and
a little more. This is, I think, going to be one of those a little more episodes. And in fact, I'm manifesting. We're going to make it a little.
Okay.
We're going to make it a little.
We're going to keep it short.
Yeah. So like, how about this? Like, how about I run? I just had a little bit of a light bulb moment, and it's not something that I've never thought about before, but just haven't really put these ideas together. So maybe I can like run my little crank theory by you, and then I would love to hear your thoughts.
I'm so excited. Please do it.
Okay, great. So like, we're talking about career progression here, and we can talk about it through the lens of CX as well, because I guess we know CX career paths pretty well, and we know our own leadership career paths. But I kind of want to put this in like, the broke, woke, bespoke format. I guess for people who don't, it's just like a meme format, right? Where you kind of have like one idea, which is like kind of supposed to be like, this is the wrong way to do things, and that's broke. And then maybe you get to like, okay, I'm going to do like the right version of the idea, and that's woke. And then you have the like galaxy brain version of it that's bespoke. So it's like even better. So I think like, let's start with broke. A lot of people struggle, and I have struggled in my own career progression, with not necessarily being able to achieve what I want to achieve, whether that's a promotion or whether it's or maybe even like a certain rating in my review.
Yes.
Because you feel like there's a disconnect between like what you value and then the feedback that you get back from the organization, right? So you might be like, hey, you know what? Like, I actually was the hardest working person on my team. I did more of X than anyone else, or like I showed up more days than anyone else, or I am being a little bit facetious, or like innovation. Like, I came up with all these like super creative solutions that nobody else on my team came up with. And so like that can feel really good in the moment, but then you go in and you have your review, or you're up for promotion, and your boss says to you like, yes, all of that is true, but you're still not ready. You're not ready for the promotion, or hey, you're not going to get like the outstanding rating or something like that, because like that was good, but wasn't whatever. It wasn't stellar or something like that, right? So we like kind of come in with all these like unspoken standards that we have about our own performance that might not be a match for like what your boss actually cares about or what the organization cares about. So that can be really frustrating. Then you might say, okay, well, if I'm kind of like writing my own rules here and those don't match with the ones that the organization has, what rules does the organization actually have? Like, what are the actual standards? Mm-hmm. So then now we get into kind of like woke, right? Which is like, you might actually have performance guidelines that exist at your organization. There might actually be like a job matrix or a signal matrix or a competency framework or something like that that kind of says like, what do we expect of people at each level? And at that point, like what I might do is I might go and have that conversation with my boss and be like, okay, let's look at this. Like, what are the actual areas where I'm overperforming? Where are the areas where I'm lagging? Like, where can I catch up and really make sure that we have a solid case and solid accomplishments coming into next year. And I think that's good. That's a lot better. Like, especially if your organization has written performance standards or a matrix or something that you can look at, then it kind of takes like these assumptions that you were making, or like you writing your own rules, to at least like you playing by the organization's rules.
Yeah.
But again, I think like especially at some levels, like let's say at more like junior levels, that tends to work well, or in certain roles that are more defined, where it's like, I mean, in CX, let's take like CSMs, I think can be like this, support agents, some professional services roles, like implementation roles can be like this, where there's like enough people in role where it's easy to compare performance and potential. And so it's easier for you to kind of ask that question, like, what are the rules? Are they defined? Like, where are they written down? What can I do to like make sure that I'm in the top, you know, decile of people performing in this role? But then you start to get into more senior roles where that becomes less clear, or maybe you get into management and that's less clear, or maybe even in some of the roles that we have been in or have hired for, roles like customer education or community or certain like program manager roles where things just get a lot more subjective.
Yeah.
So if you go too far in looking for these objective standards, at a certain point, it's not creating clarity for you anymore. It's just kind of like a series of boxes that you check.
Yep.
And that's not going to work after a certain point. So you might be checking the boxes, but are you really steering towards where you want to get in your career, especially once there aren't boxes to check?
Yeah.
So then finally, that gets us to bespoke, which is, I think, like the you know, the final form of this career evolution Pokemon, the unspoken rules. Being able to get a gauge for, regardless of what is written down or regardless of the rules that I set for myself, which was like the first two phases, what does the organization actually care about? What does my manager actually care about? Like, what are some of the things that aren't being said explicitly that can give me, you know, could accelerate me more towards the things that I want? Again, whether it's promotion, whether it's a rating, whether at that point it might even be like certain projects or opportunities that will be more like, you know, slope changers in your career. And that's where I think, again, things get a little tricky because that's not really defined. And maybe we can talk a little bit about like, what are some of the tactics that you can use to get some of those unspoken rules out there. But I just had thought of all three of those ideas together and why like all of those, like, I think all of those dynamics are present when we think about our own career progression and when we as leaders think about career progression for people on our teams. But I've never really like connected all three of those together. So, and I've never sequenced them like a Pokemon evolution like that. So I'm curious, Dee, like, how does this resonate with you? What do you think?
I think this is awesome. I think like the way that you're thinking about it, there's probably, there's like a way to make it a lot more, make it make more sense than I think it does today for folks as we're navigating annual review, mid-year reviews, or just general feedback and ratings in organizations. It's like what's like a sanity tested way of like thinking about this to where it can actually help folks navigate. Because I think like most of the folks that I'll talk to or that I've like managed before, it's like, they want to understand the rules. They want to understand, okay, like, what's the step to go from being a level 4 to a 5 to a 6 to a 7? And like, I want this charted out for me. And like, to your point earlier, like that makes sense for like some of the junior roles and things like that. But so, you know, like so many people navigate those rules then and then still don't get a promotion and wonder why. And of course, like what I think you're talking about is discussing the unspoken rules that may have prevented them from getting that promotion, assuming, of course, that their performance was there and blah, 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 blah. So I think it might be helpful to talk about some of the like things that you're not going to find on those charts, like on those, like, you know, that what did you call them earlier? It's like not a proficiency model,
a competency matrix or like a leveling guide or a signal matrix.
Right. Like all those types of things. Like, yes, those have clear things. And I think like, you know, people get really frustrated because they're like, oh, you're supposed to perform at the level above the level that you're in for a while before you can even be considered for promotion. And it's like, we're not here to be like, this is unfair or this is uncool or we don't like this or we don't like, that's not the point, I think, of the conversation that you want to have, right? Like, you're just like, you want to lay out.
Yeah, exactly. I kind of want to lay out like why doing like the first two things, like the broke and the woke, like either kind of like writing your own rules or trying to like get so close to your organization's like written rules for it are not necessarily going to get you what you want. And then think about like, what are some of the things that you can do in regards to, especially like the unwritten rules to get them working for your advantage instead of against
it.
Yeah. Okay. So like I think you asked the question a moment ago and I liked it. It's like, what are some of the things you can actually do to learn those unwritten rules and what they are? I mean, I think like one place to start is look at the people who are getting promoted, or if what you want is like a certain project, look at the people who are getting those types of projects. Or if you want a certain rating, you're probably not going to know everyone's rating, but like you can still get it by proxy, which is like, look at the people who by and large are being like celebrated in the organization, not like for specific reasons, for having impact, yeah. I would say. Because there are a lot of people who get celebrated for like being involved in stuff. There are a lot of people who get celebrated for being like in interesting projects, but those aren't necessarily people who get promoted.
So that's it.
So like, what are they doing? And specifically, like, even like, what are they doing that you're not?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I think an unspoken rule that I'll just kind of throw into the mix is that how much leverage are you providing for the business and for your manager? That's like another person I would ask, right? So it's like what you're saying is talk to the people who are getting promoted and like find out what they're doing that you're not doing. I would also say directly ask your manager how you can get them more leverage.
Absolutely. Right?
And I would actually just like steal that as the question for your manager. And it's something that I ask my managers and my regular one-on-ones. Like, so we'll go through our topics, we'll go through our agendas, like all of that. And then it's like, you've got some time at the end, or maybe you lead with this and you just say like, what is one thing that I could do that would like give you more leverage right now?
Yeah. And can you give some examples then of like what they reply? Like, what are the types of things you can actually do to give your manager
leverage? That's a great question. Let me think of one. I think that one of my managers once told me that there's this account, that's like known. It was like notoriously known for being a very difficult customer across the company. And basically they were like, I think we need a fresh pair of eyes. Like, can you kind of get involved in this like renewal deal that's coming up and just like see what might help the customer more? And I was like, do you mind actually if I like talk to the team, but then also like request to talk to the customer? It's like not my customer or anything like that, but it's like, it's all our customer, right? Like, we work at the company. The feedback that I got was like, actually like, no, like, yes, under normal circumstances, we would absolutely want you to talk to the customer and love the idea and the initiative, but things are very tense right now. And so we're trying to put together a renewal that's going to be competitive on pricing. And what I like really need you to go in there to get me leverage is to figure out how CX can actually like help drive more value. And what are the things that we might be able to bring in that like you're going to see with fresh eyes that we're not doing as an organization? I was like, got it. Awesome. Okay. We'll not speak to the customer in this case. Mm-hmm. And we'll really focus on internally how we might be able to do more, be more and like be better aligned.
Yeah. That's a really good one.
Yeah.
Do you have others that come to mind?
Let's see. Other unspoken rules that come to mind?
No, like other leverage. Cause like, I could probably think of one or two as well, but I really like that point.
Do you do one?
Yeah. Okay. I'm thinking like something I have been told before when I've asked, I don't ask it exactly that way, but I've asked basically a version of that question. And it's like, I, as an executive, am in like 30 to 40 decisions a day. And then if you want to go and like size them, like it's still a lot of important decisions being made even on like then a weekly basis. One thing that you can do that would make my life a lot easier, which by the way is like when we say leverage, like that's basically what we're talking about, is like what will make your boss's life easier. If I can be involved in fewer decisions because I know you're in it and I know you've done the thinking about it and you can actually like make a decision, make a recommendation, drive things forward, and then just like let me know what happened afterwards. That's already a huge win because then I can make fewer of the decisions myself. And then like for me, then Adam in that conversation, like what I would add to it is I'm like, okay, great, I can do that. But like what I'm gonna do is like when I go into a situation like that where it's like arguably you might have made that decision in the past, upfront, why don't I get your hopes, your dreams, your non-negotiables, so I can like carry that forward with that set of intent. And then you don't have to worry about the next steps. You don't have to worry about like who's driving anything.
Love that.
I just want to make sure that I know like what you want to happen here.
Yeah.
And then I have that context.
I think that's such a smart point because I think a lot of there are folks that I've worked with that are like younger, you know, a little less experienced that will assume that that just means they can categorically go and make that decision however they want. And they won't mind me for further information of like, what are my non-negotiables? And like, okay, like directionally, where are you at with this particular project situation? So that's, it's like, yeah. I'm not just being like, giving you my scepter and saying, go in there and like raise, you know, raise hell. But it.
Yeah, no, like I want you to do like a version of what I want to happen. Exactly. But like also with your expertise and ability to drive a project forward.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that's such a great.
So I think there's like value in knowing like in what decisions you as the leader kind of want the 49% vote versus where you want the 51% vote or more.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I think that's a good one. And then like maybe just kind of along the same lines of like, you know, fewer escalations, like please try to like own and resolve more things and let me know how you resolve them. That's kind of like the bring me solutions, not problems, which I think gets misinterpreted a lot because on its face, there's a lot of things wrong with bring me solutions, not problems. It means that like people will never highlight anything that's going wrong in the organization to you and there will be no psychological safety. But what I think like people mean when they say things like that and it's good intent, like in terms of leverage, what they're actually talking about is like, you can make more decisions than you think you can. And if you need a second set of eyes, you can tell me the decision you want to make and get my opinion on it. But if I can do less thinking about what the solution has to be and you can drive it on your own and you can make a recommendation and you can articulate it, ideally in like a one pager with trade-offs, or maybe your organization has like a different way of doing it, do more of that so that like your leader has to do less of that thinking on their own.
I love this one. And it is an unspoken rule, but it's like, you know, just because you are you're solving problems doesn't mean I don't want to hear about them. So I want to understand what a problem was, the solution that you like, talk me through your way of thinking, like structure that all out for me, and then let me know what the solution was. And then we can also switch to the part of, this is what like Laura on my team at Mira and I used to call it, was like, now it's the portion of our one-on-one where we're going to thought partner on problems that don't have solutions and we're going to come up with them together. Right. So you can literally also just like structure your conversations in that way. It's like, hey, these are just heads up for you. These are some problems. These are the resolutions. And like, we're off to the races, like nothing, no action for you here is like how I would, you know, like categorize that. And then it's like, all right, we need to like thought partner on these problems. And it's like, Make that list small.
And again, not because like your boss doesn't want to do that with you, but like certainly something I've noticed is I've taken on more scope, which comes along with being senior, is like you just have less time to think about most things or to consider them or to get full context on them. So in a lot of cases, the person who's closer to the problem is going to make a better analysis and a better recommendation anyway, even if the final decision needs to lie higher in the org chart.
Exactly. And like, I still want the context. Like that's the other thing to realize is like, while we have a lot of things to do as leaders and whatever, like you just said just now, it's like, we still want to hear all the things because we do need the context, right? Like, unless I specifically say, don't tell me about the stuff I don't want to know, communicate, like tell me.
Yeah. I think that's a great unspoken or unwritten rule is that like, and maybe there's kind of a couple of rules in here. One is sort of the rule of like, if you did your work in a forest and nobody heard it, did it make a sound? Just like you kind of assume that it's like good to go solve a lot of problems independently and like do really good work independently. But like, if you're the only one who knows that you're doing that great work, it's going to be really hard then to like justify a promotion. So there's a couple ways around that. One is actually like keeping a log of your own accomplishments and outcomes and making sure that you have that for performance time, like regardless of whether you think your boss was also writing them down or not. Like as a manager, I find it incredibly helpful when people kind of like bring me their portfolios because they're like, even if I did write a lot of it down, there's probably some stuff that's in there that like I either forgot or like didn't think about or didn't know about.
Many children. So, like that's the other thing too. It's just, it's impossible to keep track of everybody's.
Yeah. And the second part of it, yeah, I agree. The second part of it too is just like making sure that you have a forum throughout the year to be clear. I mean, especially to your manager, but also to like other stakeholders and people in the organization. Like, what are the things you're doing? What are the accomplishments that you're making? What are the problems that you are solving? And like, if you can do that clearly and concisely, and like make it engaging and relatable to people. Like, I do think you increasingly become someone with a reputation for success.
How do you do that?
One thing that I do with my team is we have a channel in Slack that is specifically, like we call it our FYI channel, but it's specifically a running log of all the project outcomes. Nice. on our team. So whenever we develop a new campaign or release a new course or, do an initial, like an interesting campaign in the community or something like that, we'll put it in that channel. And then often what I'll do is I will forward things from that channel, either to my boss or to our leadership channel or to relevant stakeholders, basically to make sure that people are aware of what we're doing and what problems we're solving. Another thing that I do is make sure that by and large, the work that our team is doing, not just that I'm personally doing, is tied to organizational goals. So like, I think you talked about OKRs earlier, when there are organizational priorities, when there are like major initiatives, like really making sure that our team is part of them, like in ways that actually add value. So then like when we're doing our work, we're not just doing our business as usual work. We're also doing things that are like tied to higher level outcomes.
Is there like run the business work? There's like run the business work, and then there's like work that's tied to initiatives or initiatives that are tied to objectives or KRs. And so, yeah, those are good distinctions. Yeah.
And then even with like run the business work, like one thing that's helpful is like as where I can, like I try to like frame things in terms of either like context or expectations. So like, it's one thing for me to say, I produced 100 widgets this year. And it's a completely different thing for me to say, I produced 100 widgets against a target of 60.
Right.
Again, is really helpful. Cause again, even if you think your boss knows this, like they may have forgotten, the data might live in a million different places. They have many children. Yeah. And then I think the last thing, like this kind of relates to this, but I think probably is more on the previous topic, is like where you were talking about thought partnering, is I've developed a one-on-one format for this. So in my one-on-one template doc, I have created a set of, and I don't think this is my idea originally, but I made this as a template more recently, where like I have a column basically for the level of urgency or priority around the topic. And then I have a column for like, what outcome do I want? Is this FYI? Is this, I want to discuss it? Is this, I want your point of view? Is this, I need an answer? So then it makes it clearer, like in each case, what I really need from my manager in that one-on-one, or do I just want them to know something? And that's where I like tend to put in like wins or issues that I'm tackling on my own that they don't need to get involved in, but just want them to know that it's going on. Or areas where like I want a thought partner and I really like need their point of view on something so that we can more fully discuss it.
No, I love that. I do something similar with my team in that every week it's like, and I send a deep digest to my boss. So it's like, here's like the top three things that are top of mind for me. And a lot of those are like FYIs or like ways for them to know that what I'm focused on. And I have my team do the same thing to me. So all my directs are required to send one of those, to me per week. And some of those are going to make it into mine to my manager and be like, this is what like so-and-so is working on. And it's
we actually do that as a group too. Like we have our weekend digest where we do that. And it's essentially like, what were the accomplishments and celebrations of the week? What are the challenges? Like anything else that's top of mind. I also write like an update to my team so they know what I'm thinking about. And then that is the doc that I look at when I'm looking back through the year. And I want to remember like what were the major accomplishments.
That's what I do too, is like I look at their digests on a weekly basis when we're doing mid-year and annual reviews. And then like, I think the other thing is like, you can look at your own so that when you're doing your self eval, it like helps, right? Like all of those. So, and it's all something that I think like works really well together. And then it, like your one-on-ones can be times where you are really digging into, or delve, as the AIs are saying.
It's hot with the AIs. You've got Gen Z slang, Gen Alpha slang, and AI slang.
Speaking of Gen Z slang, by the way, just like a quick thing, I will say that like my favorite thing is Menti B. Like, I think that's like brilliant. And
Menti B is great.
Menti B is a mental breakdown for folks, for the uninitiated. But yes, what a great thing to contract.
Menti B feels like something I would order at like a cafe in Melbourne.
It reminds me of those Mentos commercials where they used to do that science thing, right? Where you put like a Mento in a Coke or something. And it's like, anyway, okay. This is becoming another podcast. So where were we?
Other unspoken rules.
Okay, one big one that I'll say is because when you're working with humans, we like to work with people that are fun to work with, that are enjoyable to work with. And it cannot be, I cannot underscore this enough. Like, people want to work with people that are fun to work with. So, like, it's hard as a leader when there's so much stuff that you're struggling to have direct reports who are really, like, just making your life harder. And there's ways that we talked about this before, where it's like, okay, not having enough context in a conversation to make it harder for me to context switch, right? Like,
overcomplicating problems and decisions and not coming with a point of view on, like, either again, like, how to solve them, or at least, like, what you think the root cause might be.
Exactly. Like, not telling me stuff so that when I go somewhere and they're like, hey, did you know about the situation that happened with Adam? And I'm like, well, no, Adam and I just had a one-on-one and he didn't tell me.
Yeah, that's where, like, well, like, no surprises. Like, that's where that comes from.
Yeah, no surprises, right? Like, those types of things. But in general, it's like, people, you know, try not to be high maintenance. I think that's, like, an important thing. You know, again, it's like, I'm not saying don't tell people things or don't do this or don't do that. But it's like, emotionally regulate before you're speaking to your manager.
You have a couple of things in there. Like, can we talk about that for, like, a brief moment? Because, like, you've got, like, like, fun to work with, like, at first doesn't necessarily sound like that. Cause, like, really, the more you've gone into it, the more you're talking about, like, emotionally regulating. We're talking about, like, not overcomplicating things. We're talking about, like, no surprises for your manager.
Yeah. Let's reframe that. Like, be easy to work with, as opposed to being fun. Cause, like, you don't need to come into a stand-up routine, as much as that sounds great to me. It's like, I'm not talking about that kind of fun, right? It's like, I'm talking about how to remove friction from our interactions in a way that, like, is beneficial for both of us. Again, so if, like, there has to be friction in the interaction for some reason, bring it, right? That's, then I know that it's, like, worthy, like, it's, like, worthy of that friction. But in general, we should be, you know, 70% of the time trying to grease the wheels for our managers and, like, expect for us too.
And at least for me, that doesn't mean, like, no confrontation, say yes to everything, be, like, toxically positive. Like, I don't believe in that, and I don't embody that in my own work. So I just want to be, like, over clear that that's not what we're talking about. But what we are talking about is, like, what you just said. And I think, like the way I've started to think about it is, you know, because Fabiola, my partner, is Mexican, they have a special term in Spanish for this, where, like, it's called sangre pesada, which is, like, certain people just have literally, like, heavy blood. You can kind of tell, like, by a way a person shows up, whether they have heavy blood. Like, are they taking everything seriously? Are they not emotionally regulating? Are they kind of attracting more attention to themselves in a situation versus kind of, like, facilitating it for other people?
They fixated, like, on the wrong things.
Yeah. Like, are they constantly, like, bringing up relatively minor issues or solvable issues? It's that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think it's like you talked about the one pager. It's like, that to me is an artifact of trying to grease the wheels and make things easy for folks. Right. It's like putting something together that makes it easy to skim, understand, and then action on something. Like, that's awesome. That means you're great to work with, right?
Yeah.
Going into a call with somebody who, and this might be a little bit more where I had started with the whole fun comment, was like, going into a call, a little bit of small talk is great. Build that rapport with people, like, be genuinely interested in, like, how things are going for them instead of moving straight to the transaction or coming in being a grumpy pants. It's like, look, we all have bad days. But, you know, sometimes you've got to put the bad day away and you've just got to show up and be in the thing with your coworkers. And and again, you don't have to do it all the time. Sometimes you're going to show up and just be like, guys, I'm low energy today. Or you don't even have to qualify it. It can happen and it's okay. And people can move on. But if you're constantly the person coming into a call and it's like being the Eeyore, like, my God, man, like, I just can't deal.
No. And I mean, like, again, it's not that, like, you'll never get promoted if you're working that way, or you won't get a high rating if you work that way. Like, often you will, but, like, I do agree that it's typically harder. You're creating a barrier for yourself.
And I think sometimes it can point to these limitations that you don't have. Like, it can be like, if this person is always in a bad mood, am I going to promote this person to a manager role? You know, are they more likely than someone who's less grumpy to create a toxic culture? Probably the science says no. But, you know, that's just your first instinct is like, when someone's in a bad mood, here's what it is for me. Here's the problem. When someone else is in a bad mood, I immediately feel like I'm now in a position when we're in public or like in a Zoom meeting or something where I have to kind of like overcompensate for that person's bad mood, and everyone does. And so then they're now putting more energy into the system because your energy is sucking the energy out. And it's like, that's not what you want. So you do kind of need to chuck things to the side. But again, I'll say like, if that feels performative and that's hard, don't do it. Just read the room and understand if you want to come in and say, hey guys, like, can I come back in a bit? You know, like I'm kind of having a day. I got to take care of some things. Or you're like, I'm a little low energy today, guys. Like, think nothing of it. And let's just like move on. Sometimes it's just a simple acknowledgement of that, that it has nothing to do with the people in the room. And I think that that's like, I think that's just good manners.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's like a similar one to that, that I would just like tag on as a very quick subcategory, which is just like communication. Especially like not just with your manager, but like thinking about being in meetings and rooms like that, is that like, if you're communicating in a way that is not being well received by others, or if you're not creating clarity, but you're like someone that people have to work to understand, and then like your boss or your coworkers are jumping in and being like, well, what I think this person means is like blah, 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 blah. Or like you say something and like, it's just getting like blank stares. Like, you have to look into the way that you're communicating and like what you could be doing to be better understood yourself, because especially past a certain level, you're more likely to get promoted, not just on the basis of how you performed or what ideas you had, but like literally how you are sharing those ideas and how you're collaborating with others.
Yeah, that's right. And I think like collaboration is the word, right? I think that it has a lot of, there's components to being a good collaborator, and reading the room and understanding like how you might be affecting other people is important.
Okay. I think I have two more. Do you have more as well?
I don't know. Maybe I'll think of them while you're talking.
Okay, cool. Let me share one. One, I think, is like, and again, this is sort of about becoming more senior over time. You have to think about the balance between the craft skills in your job versus your business savvy. So by which I mean, like, it's really easy to go on LinkedIn and to see examples of people who are in your job profession or in like your area who are like super into the craft. They can get very technical. They work on all sorts of like cool looking projects. It might seem very innovative. And it definitely plays well and appeals to other people in your profession. Like, you could go to a conference and talk about that. And that might be very personally fulfilling to you. That might, it might be helpful for your team in some cases. And those are things that like actually might bring you joy in your job. If that's what you value most, by all means, index on that. But it might be getting in your way of getting these stellar reviews or promotions because you might be perceived as kind of like over-indexing or spending too much time on those types of solutions versus like really paying attention to what your business needs and how to solve for it and where to focus, again, to kind of be like someone who shows up and solves these types of important problems without necessarily needing a lot of direction to do that, which certainly at more senior levels becomes really important.
I see. So if I understand what you're saying, it's like you're almost like you're creating a constraint or a structural like issue that like you're like Kobayashi Maruing an interaction when it doesn't necessarily need
to. Yeah. Anyone.
So like maybe bringing in like too many frameworks from your area of expertise, like what in a cross-functional discussion and being pedantic about it is like an example of that.
That's an example of that. Another example might be like, you know, if you're in a job where like, you know, you have to work on certain projects or solve things in certain ways and you have options for how you do that. If you kind of like consistently start from like, what is the coolest thing that I can do using like the tools that I have or like that I see people do in my profession versus like, let me start from like, what is actually the problem to be solved? How can I get really clear on what that business problem is? And then, and then do something that's effective at solving it. Like, that can be a pattern that like seems on one hand, like, oh, but I'm doing all this cool stuff, but it actually ends up sort of being this like writing your own rules.
I think that's such a good one. And it's one of those, like, it depends situations, because also the opposite be true, right? Where it's like, there's people who like try to first principles everything to death to the point where nothing can move forward. And so
no, the point is like, do things pragmatically.
Be
action oriented, but don't overcomplicate it either by like sitting on the idea for too long and trying to first principles it. Cause I agree with that. Or by like coming up with this like overly technical, like crafty solution.
Yes, I totally agree. And I'm like laughing, cause there's a time where I'm not going to get too specific about this, so don't even ask follow-up questions, Adam. But there was a time, like, I worked at a place where we, like, literally in CX, we came up with this framework that we launched to customers about how to implement our product. And it was so overwrought. It was just so over the top. But for whatever reason, it resonated with whoever the hippo was at the time, right? Like,
that's the hippo, the highest paid person's opinion.
Yeah. And like, and that person was like so into it. And it's like, so many of us were like, no, don't do it. Don't release to customers. It's good. If I'm the customer, I'm going to be like, this is overwrought. You are over engineering a really simple thing. And it's like, no. And we released it and it was crickets.
I've been there. I've done it. I got the t-shirt. I know exactly what you mean.
Yes.
Did you think of any others? I have one more.
No, go for it.
Okay.
I have not.
My other unwritten rule, sometimes this one is written because like sometimes it's a formal part of the process, but often it isn't, is like, especially with promotions, to some extent, this is true of ratings, but especially promotions, think about or ask your manager, like who are the other people in the room who approve that promotion or who give input on it? Think about who are the sponsors, both like the sponsors, meaning like the people who will also like stand up for you and give feedback that like you should be promoted or you should get this rating or whatever, but also like literally like who's in the room during calibrations, like who else like gets to weigh in on this. And like, so you can like think and maybe get a 360 from those same people, get feedback from those people, or even ask your boss, like, what do you think this person's perception of me is? Like, is that something that I need to work on? Like, if you really want kind of a more foolproof promotion, that is one really good thing that you can do that I just don't think a lot of people actually write down.
That's such a good point. And I think it's important to, again, like emotional regulation is like 90% of everything we need to do at work. But it's like, if you feel like really bad about this stuff, you've got to work on distancing yourself from it because it's not a judgment call on you. Like any of these things, like
what do you mean by feel bad about this stuff?
So like I've had a conversation actually fairly recently with one of my old direct reports who was talking about the annual review process just like did not go well for her. Mm. And it was just because there were some people in the calibration room that were like, this person's too like gruff, you know? And like, I'm not really like sure. And you know, so she's feeling really bad about that. And she's like, that's like not my heart. Like, I'm not rude. I'm not, you know, like sort of rough around the edges and stuff. I don't know why this person thinks this, that I am this person. And I'm like, this is not a judgment call on you as a person. They don't know you fully as a person. And to a certain extent at work, no one's going to know you fully as a person. Right. And so you've got to realize that like this, there's a perception based on the context that they have and that you're like trying to fix that. It's not a judgment call on you as a person. And I think that that can really help.
I love that you said that. Cause like, I agree with that. And I also think that there's an element here of like your rating and your title and all of that is not who you are. It's not your identity. And like, if someone goes into calibrations, for instance, and like you thought you were going to get an exceeds expectations and you got an achieves expectations or something like that, like it doesn't mean that you're like a piece of doo-doo and nothing you do matter and you didn't have any impact. Like, I think like it's very easy to personalize things and make them black and white. Whereas like, first of all, there's like a million reasons why that can happen. And second of all, like, even though like to some extent, like perception is political, like working in an organization is political. Like people are political. Politics exists in organizations because there are humans in organizations who all see things different ways. So like, you know, you don't want to spend all of your time playing the game because that's not healthy either. But like, especially thinking about getting these types of outcomes, you do need to think about like, what is the game to be played? Like who needs to know what, or at least not like be actively like against me, you know?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I think one really great advice that I was given personally when I was younger and I was taking some feedback just like way too seriously to heart was you got to play the game. Just play the game, right? And so I think if you can distance yourself away from this, like not let it be something that like creeps into your bones and you can play the game a little bit, I think that's great. Because keep in mind, like you have a choice if you want to take feedback and act on it or not. And there are plenty of times where even if I've wanted to succeed in the workplace, the feedback that I was being given in order to succeed, it didn't sit well with me. I was like, I'm not really interested in doing that. And I'm not interested in taking from everyone all the time, and I'm not interested in taking all advice. And I think we all have that agency and we all have those choices. It's just up to you if you want to play the game or not and how you want to play it.
That's that. I love that. And I've been in very similar situations where, yeah, like you get feedback and then like someone tells me either I can like disagree with their perception or I can accept what they're saying and accept that what they're saying is accurate, but then being like, yeah, I don't want to do that. Like that's not, that wouldn't feel right. Good. Or like, I don't have I don't have the effort to do that. And then like you get the rating you get and you need to like, I have the mantra, you know, basically like my rating is not my worth. I am enough. Like it's not like I care less now about what my rating says about me. I care more about what is the actual feedback being given and like to what extent I can and want to act on it and like what it will mean if I do act on it. Like, does it produce a better outcome in the end?
Yeah.
So I totally agree with that. And like, finally, along those lines, you made me think about this. You know how we say feedback is a gift?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I mean, at Slack, I like that we said it differently. We said feedback is a workout because it's good for you, but you might not always want to go do it.
Yep.
But the second thing about feedback as a gift, I just thought about this as you were talking. It's like, we assume that means that like all feedback is good because we like gifts. But like, actually, if you think about that metaphor for a moment, it's entirely possible to get a gift you don't want.
Right. And maybe there's two ways to think about this. So I'll just make it like a cutesy rhyme. That feedback is either a gift or that feedback is a grift, right? So sometimes people give feedback because they want you to behave in certain ways or I'll give you an example of one that I cannot stand, but it's like when somebody in a really great position of power says, this often to women, that they're not humble enough.
Yeah, that's that Admiral Akbar rule. It's a trap, right?
Right. So like that's one. And then what's that other one? You and I've talked about this before where it's like, sometimes it's a little bit lazy. I think there's some truth to this one actually, but there's, it's a little bit lazy to be like, well, you didn't get promoted because you're not strategic enough.
Ooh, I hate not strategic enough.
I know. So it's like, you know, well, and that's one where you can get feedback. That's a gift on why you're not strategic enough, because somebody can actually break it down for you. Or you'll get feedback that's a grift, right? Like, you're not strategic enough is like, they don't have any good reason why you weren't promoted. You're just not liked, or politically you're not on the up and up or whatever it is. And it's like really hard to speak that out loud because of all of the like issues that it could create. So it's kind of a grift to be like, you're not strategic enough, and then not give you specific reasons.
Yeah, no, I think that's like, I mean, and again, this kind of goes back to our original point about like trying to get as much of the unspoken spoken as possible. So it's like,
There
are ways to do this, and there are ways to do it without it feeling super confrontational. And ideally, if you have a great manager, they will actually just like figure out how to tell you this, even if they need to do a little bit of translation or anonymization. But like, the more you can get that, like, what was the actual reason instead of like, what's the party line that's being given about this? Like, then at least it doesn't say anything about you as a person, but it tells you how to navigate.
Exactly. And I think also as a leader, sometimes you're not going to have enough context, or like you're just going to come out of a calibration session and be like, I completely disagreed with my peers on like why this person's not ready for promotion. Yep. They're ready. And that's like, you know, depending on the relationship with you have with your directs and like how they kind of take this kind of thing. I've been very honest with people and I've said, look, there's something going on here. I can't put my finger on it. I'm going to try to get more information. I also recommend that you do these three things to get more information. Yep. And then, you know, we're going to try again. Right. I think that you deserve this. And I think we're going to try again. And that's the other thing I would say is like, you're not going to get everything you want the first time. And I think then you've got a choice. You can decide if you want to try again, or you can be like, F this, I'm out.
Yeah.
Again, you've got choices. You know, I'm not saying they're good or bad choices, but you've got them.
No, but that helps everything, I think, feel more empowering, like especially in a moment like this where we're talking about like the frustration that comes of missed expectations or misaligned expectations or not being in control. So I mean, honestly, I love that. And I also think in terms of feedback, we can say, indeed, sometimes feedback is a gift. Sometimes feedback is a grift. And when feedback is a workout, it's a hell of a lift.
Oh, nicely done. Nicely done. We should get t-shirts.
We should. Do we cue the outro music now or anything to add?
Yeah. Nope. I think we did this.
All right. Well, we have broke, woke, bespoked career progression and the unspoken rules. We will put a question on our LinkedIn, and the question will be something like, what are the unspoken rules that you found when encountering career growth and progression, or like maybe a nicer sounding version of that didn't come off the top of my head.
That's right. I love it. And we're a new podcast. We're still kind of on our sea legs here. So if you could like us, 5-star rating us, leave lovely comments, that will help us get discovered. And if you've got feedback for us, we're always open to it as well. We love feedback. That's a gift.
We will read all of it. As long as it's not a grift, we will take it into consideration. So yes, please give us feedback, especially if that feedback is a 5-star review. Thank you, Alan Coda, for the music. My feedback to you is that even though it's unspoken because there's no lyrics, it is beautiful sounding, and I treasure you and this music dearly.
I agree. You exceeded expectations.
Amazing. But the panel has calibrated and said that you're not ready for promotion.
Not quite yet, but maybe next season.
But we will promote your new album when it comes out.
Thanks, everybody. Bye, see you on the way.
Oh, it's yours now. Okay. I actually need to figure out what I'm going to do with my US driver's license, because that's going to get renewed soon, and I need to figure out how to not have zero driver's licenses.
Yeah, that's true. You don't want to be one of those.
I don't want to be one of those.
No. I mean, in Curacao, you drive a lot. You have to. So I had a Dutch database and still have it somewhere. And it has a little it's huge, and it's like a little folio. So you can open it like this.
Yeah.
And your photo is like in the middle of it, and it's like stapled. So.
That's why it's weird though, because like I have a very vivid image of myself going back to the US and like pulling that like Mondo driver's license out if I get pulled over, or like even trying to get into a bar or something like that, and I'm just staring at it and going like, yeah, the Netherlands, like that's a real country.